Okay, good evening. This is Dr. Joe Tata. Welcome to the Health and Wellness Podcast. I am a doctor of physical therapy and certified clinical nutritionist. It's my mission with this podcast to inspire and transform the health of over 20 million people by the year 2020. And one of the ways I do that, or one of the ways I have helped to do that, is by interviewing experts in the health space as they share actionable strategies. Tonight's guest is Dr. Hyla Kass. She is a physician and expert in the field of integrative medicine and psychiatry. She is board certified in psychiatry and neurology, as well as integrated and holistic medicine. Dr. Kass helps individuals withdraw safely and comfortably from addictive substances, including prescription medication. In her practice, she uses targeted nutritional supplements, many of which she has personally formulated and designed to enhance mood, mind, and energy. She frequently appears as a guest on radio and television shows such as The View and Dr. Oz. She has authored or co-authored numerous articles and several books, including The Addicted Brain, How to Break Free, 8 Weeks to Vibrant Health, Supplement Your Prescription, What Your Doctor Does Not Know About Nutrition, and Complementative and Alternative Medicine in Psychiatry. She is a graduate of the University of Toronto School of Medicine. She's a former clinical professor at UCLA School of Medicine and is currently in private practice in the Los Angeles area. To learn more about her, you can visit her online at www.cassmd.com. That's www.cassmd.com. And with that introduction, Dr. Hyla Kass, welcome to the Health and Wellness Podcast.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
It's great to have you here tonight. I'm so excited to talk about all the things that have to do with your work around, obviously, mental health. And I like to start off each podcast with one solid tip or strategy for my listeners. So if we could just talk a little bit about, to start off, as far as a tip goes, since prescription medication is used to alleviate depression, what are some of the danger signs that people should be aware of if they're going to begin an antidepressant?
Well, before you even begin an antidepressant, I think you should start by saying, wait a minute. I'm not saying just say no. I'm saying say wait a minute to your prescribing physician, because the symptoms of depression can mean many, many things. It could be a thyroid deficiency. It could be another hormone deficiency. It could be a nutrient deficiency, a B vitamin deficiency, a mineral deficiency, amino acid deficiency. It could be a genetic predisposition with a difficulty in methylation. Many, many reasons why people have depression that have nothing to do with your mother and you didn't, you know, have problems as a kid. That's part of it. You may have psychological issues, but let's look at the biochemistry first. So before you even accept a prescription, which is simply a Band-Aid covering over the symptoms, let's look under the hood. So that's my little tip for this evening.
Excellent. So the first tip is, before you start taking a medication, to ask your physician or ask your practitioner, what are other alternatives before we get to the medication, and what other tests can we run to see what is the root cause of the depression possibly?
Yes, and there are really a list of tests that need to be done. And the unfortunate thing is, I mean, let's just face it, most conventional psychiatrists and conventional MDs just whip out the prescription pad. And these are my colleagues. I'm a physician. I'm medically trained. However, I do think beyond the box. And I just think it's so important, and I'm trying to educate my colleagues about this, that they need to do a whole series of lab tests. I mean, I'm shocked that prescriptions are given out without any lab tests. I mean, even to see if somebody's liver function makes them be able to tolerate and metabolize these medications. The other thing is, the medications, the antidepressants, have not been shown to be truly effective. They are largely placebo. And a lot of research has been done that shows that when they're compared to a placebo, they don't really do any better unless you're seriously depressed. And in that subsection of people, there is a difference. So backing back to what I said earlier, the conventional docs may not even know what lab tests ought to be done to look at depression. That's the sad thing. And so I really try to educate the individual, besides educating doctors, of course, to be able to ask for the right lab tests. In my book, 8 Weeks to Vibrant Health, I have a whole list of labs. And even though 8 Weeks to Vibrant Health is not particularly focused on antidepressants and medications, it gives a list of all the really good lab tests that need to be done that can rule out biochemical issue, like anemia. You want to rule out anemia, hypothyroidism, and some of the other things I mentioned. So get a good medical workup first. And it may need to be with a doctor who is more of a functional medicine doctor, also known maybe as an alternative medicine doctor. But truth is, I don't see it as alternative. I see it as good medicine.
Yeah, that's true. I often wonder why the word alternative is connected to that, because I think the goal is to really make that mainstream and the alternative medicine to be our current system, which is more of a sick system.
Absolutely. It's lacking. It's sadly lacking. Now, the conventional medicine is good for emergencies. It's good for accidents, if you need surgery, if you're in a car accident, whatever. It's good. But for chronic conditions like depression, diabetes, cancer, all of that, we really need to add in all that we know, all the metabolic things that we know. It's all peer-reviewed. This is all in the peer-reviewed literature. It's all in the journals. So it's what the conventional medicine doctors know plus a whole lot else.
Right. So you obviously, you mentioned your background is obviously you're a medical doctor. How did you become interested in, I don't want to use the word alternative, we just said not to use it, interested in functional medicine?
Expanded medicine. How's that? Expanded medicine.
Right.
It's interesting. First of all, I grew up as a doctor's kid, so I felt very comfortable around the whole realm of medical care, health treatment, sick people, hospitals. All of that was really very familiar to me. So it wasn't scary or intimidating. So that's one part of it. The other part is that my dad was a GP practicing from the house. So I got to see his patients firsthand, and I got to actually, you know, answer the door, talk to his patients, and watch how they transformed by being treated well, by being listened to. I wasn't in on his sessions, but I could see the difference between when people came and when they left, and his attitude, which was one of really caring. And I think that's a very important part of the whole healing process, is the relationship between the doctor and the patient. So that's part of my background. That's part of why I wanted to do this more in-depth medicine, because I really wanted to listen to people and figure out what's really going on. You know, not just that you had, some trauma in your life, which is also, by the way, very important. I will never minimize that. But you also have to deal with the biochemical, really sequelae often of trauma. Because when you have trauma, you have a lot of stress. When you have a lot of stress, you use up a lot of your nutrients, for example, and use up a lot of your hormones. So it's a good idea to deal with stress and deal with trauma. Because then that's more of an upstream solution, but at the same time, we need the downstream solution of correcting the nutritional deficiencies, the hormonal imbalances, and so on. And so that's all part of good medicine. And the other part, the other answer to your question is, I began to see how, A, the meds didn't work, the psych meds didn't really work that well, and I began to see the side effects of the medications, the lack of libido, anxiety, sleep problems, stomach aches, headaches, nausea, so many different problems, so many side effects. And people wouldn't really tolerate their meds. They didn't feel good on them. They didn't feel good off them, but they didn't feel good on them. So knowing that and that it's largely a placebo effect, my preference has been, let's address the root cause, and that's what I do.
Excellent. So one of the things that I like to talk about is I like to talk about things that have to do with our aging population, because obviously we have, you know, a whole subset of our culture, our baby boomers who are getting older and they're concerned about their health. They want to maintain their health. They want to live vibrantly, you know, into their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 100 hopefully. Talk to us about the effect that depression can have on memory.
Well, this is interesting because they really are a continuum. And both depression and memory loss have to do with brain function. And brain function has a lot to do with what your brain is made out of and what's lacking in terms of rebuilding your brain or keeping it up. You know, we're a factory. We're a chemical factory. That's the physical part of us is a chemical factory. And if we don't have the essential fatty acids the amino acids, and all the other raw materials, the enzymes, to build brain tissue, we're going to lose it. And the same thing with depression. If we don't have the right neurotransmitter precursors, if we don't have enough tyrosine to make dopamine, if we don't have enough 5-hydroxytryptophan and tryptophan to make serotonin, we're going to be lacking. Or if we have a methylation defect, and this is a genetic issue that affects maybe a third of the population, then we're not going to make enough B vitamins that are needed to make neurotransmitters to give us memory and to give us a good mood. And by the way, I explain this all really well in a freebie that I have on my website called Reclaim Your Brain. So anybody who wants to learn more about the amino acids, the neurotransmitters, how to maintain your memory, go to my website, cassmd.com, and put in your name and email, and you'll get a free copy of Reclaim Your Brain, which will explain more than I can in this fairly short podcast, because I really, really have a mission to educate people about self-care. And as we age, one of the things we really have to take care of is our brain.
Excellent. So you touched on methylation there, and obviously that's a huge topic that there's some research that obviously has been done out, but there's still a whole lot we have to learn. But I feel like, you know, I don't hear enough patients coming to me saying, oh, I was tested for, you know, methylation dysfunction. What do people need to know about? So let's say I'm a patient. I'm about to go to my primary care doctor or maybe my psychiatrist for a follow-up. What do they need to know about methylation, and what should they ask their physician?
Well, it's a little tricky because it's a broad subject. There's several genes that that give you a methylation defect. However, that doesn't mean that you have no methylation going on at all. If you didn't have any methylation, you'd be dead. So you're making some neurotransmitters. You're making some. You know, it also helps make build joints and build different cells. So it's a very important process. And if you have difficulty in methylation, it means you just need some help. And one of the things that methylation is important for is for making folic acid, or folate, not really folic acid, folate, which is important in making neurotransmitters. So if you don't methylate, you can't really make neurotransmitters properly. So it's important to know if you have that defect and to take methylated products. For example, in my twice daily vitamin and in my brain recovery product, in both of them I have B vitamins, and I use the methylated form because so many people have a methylation defect. And because these are geared toward people who are looking to preserve their brain function, they're particularly important. So I'll include those in all my my products that I've made. And the other thing is, by the way, that to preserve your brain, and I take this myself, I created Brain Cell Support Plus that has the building blocks of brain tissue, brain cells. So you want to take essential fatty acids, very important, omega-3 fatty acids, because our brain's about 60% fat. And then you also want to make sure you're getting things like phosphatidylcholine, phosphatidylserine, Gerta Cola, ginkgo, things that enhance brain blood flow, enhance the enzyme production in the brain, and enhance neurotransmitter production. So that's why I've created my line of products to actually help that to happen. And there's more information on that on my website.
Things like phosphatidylcholine and phosphatidylserine, those sound like big words to people who don't know about biochemistry, but those are just basically forms of fat that our cells use, correct?
That's exactly right. In order for a brain to function, it needs a good source of fat, and it's not French fries. Because when you eat, when you have these evil trans fats, these, you know, fried foods, when you have them, what they do is they actually harden the brain cell. So it's particularly the cell membrane. So all the wonderful reactions that occur, the exchange of chemical messengers called neurotransmitters, when they're happening in a cell that's happy, that's well-nourished, that has good fatty acids in it, it's loose, it's fluid, things go in and out of the cell easily, as opposed to a stiff cell that you get when you're eating the bad fats. So you not only should eat good fats, but don't eat the bad fats. So that's another lesson. And we're getting a lot of ADD in kids because they're eating bad fats. They're eating sugar. They're eating really bad food and not getting the right food. So, you know, both ends of the spectrum, aging and kids, we really, really, really need to feed the brain properly.
What's interesting about what you just said is that people think, or, you know, it's common knowledge that the brain uses carbohydrates to burn for fuel. But the fats are really what's essential for the proper function, though.
Exactly, yeah.
So that kind of leads me into the conversation of diet, basically, because I know you talk about diet a lot in your practice. You know, you combine diet with your nutritional supplements. There's some research coming out on a ketogenic diet and how a ketogenic diet can be beneficial for brain health. And if it's not a ketogenic diet, then it's a very low-carbohydrate, non-ketogenic diet. Can you talk about, you know, dietary strategies for people who may have depression or memory issues?
Well, that's a very interesting. That is a whole other conversation. And I'm not exactly an expert in it, but I do know that with seizure disorders and certain other brain disorders that are thought to be treatable only with lots of really heavy-duty medication, and actually not curable and actually often not controllable. When people have uncontrollable seizures, they're willing to change their diet. And if they do have a ketogenic diet, which is minimal carbs and a lot of good fats, it really changes the metabolism around and it actually stops the seizures. Some very amazing things happen. We always thought that we needed carbs in order to function, but there's a real change around that. And, in fact, we can function very well without carbs and with very minimal carbs. And, you know, you can get into a lot of arguments here. It becomes a religion. But the science shows that the ketogenic diet is extremely helpful in many brain conditions. But that doesn't mean it's not also good for normal brains. So
Right. Something
to look into for sure.
And is a low glycemic index, you know, foods that are low glycemic, is that something that you kind of steer your patients towards?
Oh, yeah, because our addiction to sugar is killing us. It's causing metabolic syndrome, diabetes, inflammation, and inflammation then leads to type 3 diabetes. First of all, it leads to type 2 diabetes, but it leads to type 3 diabetes. And type 3 diabetes is what? Dementia, Alzheimer's disease. We don't want to get that. So stay off the sugar. Stay off the sugar because that is what's going to give you the metabolic syndrome, the diabetes, the type 2, the type 3, and a big fat tire around your middle. You don't want that. So let's start our kids young, minimize the sugar. We're coming up to Halloween. Let's watch that. Let's watch the candy. Let's train our children right and also preserve our own brains as we age and preserve the rest of us as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to go back and I want to talk about antidepressants for a little bit because obviously there are a lot of people in our you know society who are on them and they wind up staying on them for years. And sometimes anti-anxiety medications as well. Can you talk about, you know, what happens to your brain when you're on them for a long time, and is it possible to safely withdraw from them? I think that's really the key. Can we safely withdraw from these medications after being on them for years?
You can safely withdraw, but safely is the key word here. You cannot go off antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications precipitously, or you really have serious effects. Because just think of it, your brain has been used to a certain level of this chemical for a very long time. And if you suddenly take it away, you're changing the homeostasis, you're changing the balance. And we don't do well with that. We need to have things done gradually. I find that when I give someone the right nutrients, the right nutritional supplements to shore up their brain function and then gradually withdraw the medication, people do very, very, very well. I mean, to be just very simply, for example, I had one woman who did this. She reported to me afterwards that she had done this on her own. She was actually, she belonged to a group that I ran of professionals. She'd taken herself off Zoloft by listening to one of my talks, starting to take 5-hydroxytryptophan or 5-HTP, and gradually increase the 5-HTP, decrease the Zoloft. And although she'd been on it for 20 years, she said she had and had tried to get off in the past with terrible anxiety and sleeplessness. When she finally, you know, got to the 5-HTP and began to withdraw, she said it was so simple. In a few months, she was off the medication, and she said she felt better than she had in many, many, many years because she didn't have that chemical brain that you get when you're on the SSRIs. She was happy.
I guess the question would be, is 5-HTP something that you recommend for people to, as a way to start to wean themselves off?
Yes, it is, but you have to do that carefully because there's an issue of something called metabolic syndrome. Serotonin syndrome. Serotonin syndrome happens when you get an excess of serotonin. So if you're taking a drug that enhances serotonin, like the SSRIs, Celexa, Lexapro, Cymbalta, Zoloft, Paxil, anyway, Prozac, if you're taking one of those, you have to be careful with 5-HTP. Take it under doctor supervision and away from, at least, 3-4 hours away from it. And I explain this in my book, The Addictive Brain and How to Break Free. I actually have a section on how to safely withdraw from the SSRIs and from the tranquilizers, the benzodiazepines, which are wicked, wicked to withdraw from. And let me tell you, you're offered a prescription of either the anti-anxiety meds or antidepressants, really question it. Really look for alternatives before you set off the medication, because once you're on it, it's very, very hard to get off it. And very often what happens is people are on it for years and years, and the drug isn't really working, but going off it is so difficult that people just stay on it.
Yes, it is.
So the only one you're
talking to
is a drug company. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was going to say, as a physical therapist, one of the things I've seen over the course of my 20-year career is the incidence of opioid, medications for pain being used. And now we have a society where people are, addicted to painkillers. How does that play into your practice? Have you seen an increase?
Serious. It's so, so, so serious. And again, there are ways to go off it naturally. Helping your brain chemistry to adjust as you go off it slowly. You can't go off these quickly. You go into, you see heroin addicts going and having the shakes, nausea, diarrhea, vomiting. They're horrible. It doesn't last forever. It lasts for maybe a few days, but not a good idea. So with the opiates, you want to go off them gradually with the support of supplements. Addictive Brain, How to Break Free, I also cover some of the more serious drugs of abuse. So it really covers the whole range from sugar and alcohol to opiates and prescribed medication.
Excellent. And I know as a medical physician, you try to treat the whole person, mind, body, and spirit, as well as their environment. Are there any topics or, any strategies around those kind of four topics? That's a big topic there, especially environment. That affects our mental health.
Well, what's going on is our environment is highly toxic. So the question is, why are there more depressed people now? Well, part of it is that we have more advertising for antidepressants on TV. But the other thing is, people are identifying themselves as depressed. What used to be considered life is now being treated with medication. You have a grief reaction. It's called, mourning. You lose somebody, you lose whatever. You lose a loved one, or you lose a job, or whatever loss, we get depressed. It's not a good time to go on an antidepressant. Then you need some therapy, and you need to actually talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that's an issue. The other issue, why we're having more, we actually are having more depression, is because all the toxins in the environment are causing inflammation, and inflammation causes depression, anxiety, insomnia, and ultimately dementia.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And last, we've talked a lot about kind of probably at this point, middle-aged people and older people. antidepressants are used in adolescence, and I don't want to call it the developing brain, but as a child, you're still developing.
It's developing, absolutely developing, until you're 26.
Exactly. So what is your kind of angle on that? Because there's been some controversy, there's been some research, there's been some...
Oh, yeah, it's obvious, really clear, that when you look at the shootings, I'm just rabid about this. You look at the shootings, they're all done by kids on meds. Okay, and you can say, oh, well, you know, because so many of them are on meds, you know, but you take an equal matched group, not on meds, who are depressed or who are troubled. And you know, you look at the stats, any way you look at the statistics, the kids who commit mass murders, these are young people committing mass murders, have been not only on medication, usually an SSRI, but have had a recent change in the medication, either increase or decrease. Or some sort of change. I wrote a Huffington Post blog about this some years ago. And sadly, the situation is just getting worse. And then the solution out there is, oh, well, let's have all these kids checked for their mental state and put them all on antidepressants. Not. Can you see the dilemma that we're in? Because young people's brains are developing. They're different. Kids are more susceptible to having suicidal and homicidal thoughts when they're on these meds. And it's really serious. When they have these thoughts, it's like, oh, I have to kill, I have to kill, I have to kill my, you know, my father, my stepfather, my grandfather, the people at work, the kids at school. And they have these delusions, and they get wacky. And it's from the drug, where the drug is inciting or increasing whatever might have been there as a threat. But then a lot of kids that have never, ever been suicidal suddenly, very sadly, commit suicide when on these drugs. Sometimes they're saved. Sometimes they have a suicide attempt. And when they survive, and they're very grateful, the family is very grateful, and it turns out it was really a drug effect, clearly a drug effect. So you're asking me the right question. And I'd say be very, very cautious before putting a young person on medication.
So is there, I guess that begs the question, is there an age there that is safe for, you know, a young adult to go on an antidepressant or an antipsychotic medication?
Well, yeah, I guess that there's a question there, but my question before that is, again, let's look at root cause rather than, well, what's the earliest age that it's really safe to use meds? Let's say, why do we need meds? And maybe for really serious cases. Or at times when somebody's having an acute bipolar episode, yeah, I'll want them to be on medication. But for the most part, there's a lot we can do ever getting to the prescription pad. You know, looking at blood sugar, looking at iron deficiency anemia, looking at B12 levels, looking at methylation issues, looking at hormones, looking at digestion, looking at the microbiome. The microbiome has a lot to do with the brain. Our gut bacteria really do talk to the brain. Looking at issues of inflammation. So I just said a whole lot there. Those are all the things that need to be dealt with before writing a prescription, which is simply symptomatic relief. And it's not even such good relief. Why stand?
It's true. I mean, it's obvious, about to say it's obvious where you stand, but I do think it's important to reiterate again for parents listening to this, and you have maybe a child who's struggling with some depression, how do we lead them down the path of not having medication, or how do we help them approach their physician, let's say, in a way that is, medication is not the first step, let's say?
That's a tough one, because basically you need to find a sympathetic physician, and many physicians won't listen. You can bring some of the research to them. I just am very impressed with the level of commitment of many parents who will hold out. And sometimes it's not so hard to hold out. I mean, I've had kids where it's been ordered by the school that they go on antidepressant medication, and I've instead given them, for example, my Focus product, which contains tyrosine and phenylalanine, which raise dopamine. So instead of putting them on a stimulant, I put them on a natural stimulant, something from nature that their brain needs. That was with some essential fatty acids. And these kids did really well. and the school was very happy that they were on anti-ADD drugs, which they weren't, you know. They weren't on any drugs, but the school was satisfied because these children were doing well, and they just assumed that the prescriptions had been, you know, taken care of. So parents can do a lot in terms of diet, in terms of nutrition, before giving in to the request or suggestion or recommendation for medication for their kids.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing for parents is to just keep in mind that if you're not getting the response you want from a physician, if they only offer medication, then please try and persist and find someone like, you know, Dr. Hyla Kass, who can, you know, help you in a more integrative functional medicine way to, you know, approach this. That's not just, it's not just about medication, it's about lifestyle, it's about your nutrition, it's about sometimes some underlying biochemical issues. Dr. Hyla Kass, has been a great interview. You have a wonderful website and blog, and you have some great blog posts there. You have some interviews there as well that are on video. But tell us where we can find out more about you.
Oh, sure. It's CassMD.com, CASSMD.com. And if you go to my website on the homepage on the right side, you can fill in your name and your email, and you'll get a free copy of Reclaim Your Brain, which covers a lot of this. And as well, there are my books there, my products, my supplements that I've been talking about, and a whole lot of information. And I'm about to revamp my website very soon. So keep watching.
Excellent. So it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast tonight, talking about all things that have to do with psychiatry and brain and natural medicine. But please go to www.cassmd.com. That's CASSMD.com. And download your free copy of Reclaim Your Brain. I want to thank Dr. Hyla Kass for being on the Health and Wellness Podcast this evening, and we will see you next week.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for a great interview.